Monday, May 6th, Planning and Zoning Commission will come to order. Roll call, please. Hi, Stephen Gass.
Yes.
Brothers.
Here.
Can I get approval for our agenda tonight?
Move approval of the agenda.
Second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Have our approval of our minutes. You've been provided with draft minutes from last meeting. Are there any corrections or additions? If not, could I hear for our minutes?
Move approval of minutes.
And second? Yes.
Aye.
Aye.
Apparently, there's no public comment tonight.
Is there any old business? And is there our new business is consideration of ordinance 01-13.
I'm going to start out by just getting you set up on how we're going to go through this real quick. You were provided tonight with a stack. It should have a binder on the top. So look for the one with the black binder on top. Clippy.
Yeah, okay.
Foot binder.
I'm thinking of a binder. I think
binders of women. Okay. This is going to seem really formal, but if you could put that on your left.
Clippy or both of them on the left?
The one with the clip on
the one with the clip on your left. The other two, Charlie will get to shortly, so put those aside. And then it's your regulation. this nice looking thing. Put it on your right. I know this sounds tedious, but I have a method to my madness.
I think they do, Dave.
Did I say Simon Says?
I got 2006.
Yeah, that's what mine is.
We'll go with it. It'll be good. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Let me just start by saying the county, about a year ago, started the process and hired a consultant to take all the ordinances that were adopted by Story County over the years and put them into one code of ordinances. It's called the codification process. It's required by the state code of Iowa that every 5 years a jurisdiction do this. Story County has never actually officially had one binder called the Code of Ordinances. And this is the result of the work that this consultant has done. What's before you tonight are the changes that we are bound by, and you as a recommending body to the planning or the Board of Supervisors look at for review and approval and action. The changes largely, and except for the chapters 87 and 88, which Charlie will get to, are very minor or grammatical. So I'm going to just breeze through them quickly with you and show you where they are in the regulations if you want to spend time on them. But really, I want to spend the majority of time on 87 and 88. It looks totally different, which is going to take a lot of getting used to from staff. It has different numbering sequences, everything, but a lot of the substance is the same. So any questions on the project before we get started? And we just got this delivered from the code company last week and had to wait until Thursday afternoon, Friday, to get permission to make copies from them because it's copyrighted. And we got that too late to mail out anything. And that's why I'm having you line it up like mine so we can go through it. But it's a beautiful night, so I'm going to try to go through. Okay. If you could go to where it says chapter 85, so remove the title page, which on your left, on the one on your left, where it says property and land use, just put that off to the side. What? Yep, chapter 85. So this is what, if you look in regulations, that's That's the, no, not page number, just...
Yeah, but see, it says, chapter 85, page 485.
Just, nope, just take that.
Remove that.
Paper off and put it to the left. There you go.
Okie doke.
The page numbers are, they're larger gaps, but as time goes by, we can add pages and not have to publish the entire code of ordinances. And the code company did set that up. So you'll see different format if you compare left to right, but chapter 85s are just our general provisions, and which is chapter 1 from our ordinance, and chapter 2. First change I want to take you to, on your staff on the left, is, let me ask a question. Do you want grammatical stuff, adding a or the? You want to hear about that stuff? Okay. Want to make sure.
Okay. Does anybody else want to hear that? I don't want to.
No, thank you.
Go to page 494. Item 54. We are proposing adding a definition of deck freestanding. We've never had that, but yet we reference it in several sections. Deck, comma, freestanding, page 494, means a deck supported entirely by its own structure. That's just to help us implement it. Okay, going on, go to page 497. On the very bottom, under item number 92, the last sentence, this is about foundation location inspections. It talks about when there's a use without a foundation, such as a co-location on a cell tower or different types of uses. This just clarifies when we schedule an inspection. It's been something we've had trouble implementing, and this just helps us define that process. It requires the applicant to flag out or some way define that location. Stop me if you have any questions. Go to...
92 done before or after completion?
92 is after we have taken an application, we've reviewed it internally, and we've issued a preliminary development permit. That gives them the go-ahead to start doing the site work and dig holes, footings, whatever, or dig the base of the foundation, but don't pour anything. Then we come out and do that foundation location inspection. It's the only inspection we do. Page 506. Item number 157. I want you to just note that it says on the very bottom, ordinance number 29. It is not ordinance number 29. It's ordinance 219. So that when you make your recommendation tonight, if you do make one, and I ask that you ask that that be changed or recommend that that be changed. And I'll help you remember that. Going to the next page, 507, look at number 161, nursery. We've added the addition of yard waste collection. If you go back to the Tamness Technologies conditional use permit we had, it doesn't, sometimes yard waste collection doesn't fit nicely into somewhere, but we've always called it a nursery. This helps clarify that there's some yard waste as part of a nursery. But if this definition does not include a composting facility, which we'll define later. So we'll just clarify the process a little bit. Number 169 on the very bottom. In the past, it only mentioned miniature golf courses for the definition of a park. We want, and this accept, those, these are accepted out from the definition of park. We want to add golf courses. Honestly, I don't know why we just have miniature golf courses and downhill golf courses.
Can I go back to 161? That's regarding commercial?
Yeah. Or a conditional use permit. Flip the page to page 508. We've added a definition of a pool. We've never had a definition of a pool. Page 508, pool. I don't know, do you want me to read that, or have you all had time to peruse it?
It's a second.
Yeah, I'll read it. Pool means an artificial basin, and it's a purpose. either constructed or operated for swimming, wading, or diving, and includes a swimming pool, wading pool, water slide, or associated bat house. Swimming pool does not include a decorative fountain that does not serve primarily as a drain, of which fountain is not connected to any type of suction device for removing or recirculating the water. This is taken right out of the kind of green dictionary.
So again, is this like for a personal pool?
Right.
So if a farmer has a pond and puts a diving board in it, then it becomes a pool.
Will be. Mm-hmm.
And wherever a pool is mentioned in the ordinance, it would make sense for that.
The only time that's really mentioned is when we talk about fences and walls. I'll get to that when we get to that section too. Okay, continuing on. Go to, I'm skipping the little ones. If you guys want to look at mine, you can, but page 516. Add a definition for yard waste composting facility. This means a facility that is used to compost leaf waste or leaf waste and grass clippings, garden residue, tree trimmings, chipped shrubbery, and other vegetative material. The term includes land affected during the lifetime of the operation, including but not limited to areas where composting actually occurs, support facilities, borrow areas, offices, equipment sheds, air and water pollution control and treatment systems, access roads, associated on-site or contiguous collection and transportation activities, and other activities in which the natural surface has been disturbed as a result of or incidental to operation of the facility.
Okay, this is again, it's commercial. A conditional use permit. Okay, right. As an example, we've got a composting spot on our land.
No, this is
got a burn pile.
No, this is for some kind of those are conditional use permit.
If you're doing it commercially.
Yeah, if you're
we had a case where they were gathering the tree branches just recently down south of town. And that they were also doing some composting there also of yard waste. And so would the whole site at that point be considered a yard waste composting facility?
Probably.
What were they doing with it?
Huh?
What were they doing with it? Selling it? The
You don't remember the case?
No, I don't remember.
Right. Yeah, they were taking it and
that was commercial.
Collection.
That's what this is dealing with. Commercial.
All right, let me ask you this. Okay, so let's say that my big old composting pile and it gets composted, and I want to sell a couple of bags to somebody.
Good cash.
Yeah.
It's.
Well, if your neighbors complain about your business, then you may have to seek a permit.
That's my neighbor's question, really.
We're not intending these regulations to make them really difficult for a personal and property owner to be
taken. That's good. I like that word.
To establish regulations and guidelines for those larger endeavors that do come in.
I just didn't know whether that case would have come in as a compost facility.
Would be a yard waste composting, which is what triggered adding this at this point.
Okay, that makes sense.
Good
point. Did you see there? Yep.
Building burnt at that facility.
Oh, did it?
Okay, I'm going to continue.
I didn't see that.
Go to
focus.
page 549. Under item number 8, 4 lines from the bottom. We're adding before a permit. I mean, sorry, it says conditions addressing such impact shall be determined at the review of required permit. It used to say zoning permit. It's not necessarily just a zoning permit, so we need to clarify and make it more broad. And as administered by the Planning and Zoning Department, or Planning and Development Department. It didn't reference who did that. It just clarified, for implementation and clarity. And that's in a couple other zoning districts. Okay, let me... I might be handing over to Charlie here soon. Page 604. Item number I, fire protection access. This is within the residential mobile home district. Talks about access for fire protection services.
What page?
604. Access for fire protection services shall be such as permit fire apparatus to approach within at least 100 feet of each manufactured home. We're proposing adding or as determined by the applicable fire chief. If situations are such that that fire chief wants it 50 feet closer, that fire chief knows what's best for the safety of those residents who have the ability to require so. Absent a building code in Surrey County, I mean, that's to protect the general health, safety, and welfare of citizens, that, especially in mobile homes. Charlie,
woo!
Go to your other packet now. Put this, the other one aside because we will come back to it when Charlie is done.
So now we're going to go to this one here.
Yep.
Gotcha.
Do you have page numbers on here that don't have page numbers online?
No.
Nope. I'll give you just a brief background on this. With the work program that the legislature measures, what our department, they directed us to make some changes to our subdivision regulations from the general standpoint. We've got a few loopholes. Issues that were coming up with some minor things that need to change. We've known a few of these for years. It's just that we never wanted to make individual small changes without bringing them forward in one lump sum like we're doing now. So we did that, even more so on the general site planning standards, you'll notice with some subdivisions we've had over the past few years, it seems that more and more applicants are taking advantage of being able to do easements instead of roads. And that's turning into a pretty big issue with our secondary roads department. Just some minor things with that as far as drainage and stuff like that. So we wanted to try to fix some of those issues. So I'll kind of go through that. And again, I don't plan on pointing out any of the grammatical changes that we made, but I'll just kind of go through and show you where I think some of the most serious changes we made to these regulations occur. So first of all, on the first page there in Chapter 87, under subdivision plat required, if you go to number 2, subsection E, we used to call that a lot line adjustment when we first adopted that. That was our hope to kind of bring some relief. If a property owner had 2 lots, parcels, whatever they may be, and they just wanted to adjust the lot line between the 2 of them, we put that in there so they were able to do that and not have to go through a subdivision plat process, which seems to be long and lengthy sometimes. So we added that in there. There was a case over by Country Estates, if you remember that first edition, they split up a bunch of their lots on that, and they wanted to combine those with some of the lots that fronted those particular lots. But we found out during that process through the assistance with the auditor's office and an interpretation of state code that that lot line adjustment actually does not work if there's an officially platted subdivision. You have to go through another subdivision plat process, and there's really no way to work around that, and since we can't make our regulations any less stringent than state code, we couldn't apply that to those particular situations. So where we were able to apply that actually was with plot to survey. I don't know if you know the difference between a plot to survey and a subdivision plat, but we can still allow them to go through that with a plot to survey process and not have to submit a subdivision plat. So more or less, instead of the word lot, we put in parcel, and that should fix that when you mean to the plot to survey, which typically parcels come off a plot survey, lots come out of subdivision. So technicality, but I did want to point that out because I'm sure a few of you might have been on the board when we put in that lot line adjustment and just let you know that it really didn't work out the way we thought it would, but we're hoping that we can make it the process hopefully a little less stringent as far as the administrative powers that we have to do that. So we'll see how that goes. Any questions on that? Okay, if we skip a few pages then, go to section 87.06, it's the residential parcel subdivision plat, and if you turn to the next page, you after that, under three subsection A, the following material shall be shown on the face of the plat. Are you all there?
Mm-hmm.
I'm too far ahead, so. Okay, so these are typically the, obviously, the material that we want to show on the face of the plat. For the most part, none of that has changed. We have made kind of a few revisions and additions. And I'm going to show this with the residential parcel subdivision, but just know that this also is probably going to affect the A subdivision, the minor subdivision, and the major subdivision. So I'll just kind of bundle them all into one here and we'll go forward after that. But first, if you look at number four in that, it says all of the existing and proposed easements located on the land be divided, including but not limited to conservation easements and septic and well easements. We never really required easements. I think we did require easements actually to show in the plat. We never specified what type of easements we wanted to see. So here we're just specifying the easements that we want to see.
This is for the review of a preliminary plat?
For the most part, yeah, these are all the preliminary plat. I'm not sure if we require the easements in the final plat as well, too.
Because there are, I can understand why you would want to see all existing easements, but it may be that in the final plat, some existing easements will be extinguished. And so having them show them on a preliminary plat at least lets you have a discussion whether it's their intent to extinguish them or not. And so this makes sense.
Yeah.
On a preliminary, but it would not make that language would not make sense on a final.
Well, and we do have that language on the final. We have all of this information, so maybe just thinking
about
that.
You may need to think about that.
Proposed and remaining.
Yeah.
That would work for us on the instead of existing and proposed, it would be proposed and remaining. I don't know if that's language you use.
But, you should work on something that sounds understandable, but you may need to polish it.
We can work that a little bit. Any other questions on that one? You skip to number 8 then, special location of all structures and setbacks thereof from each proposed lot line, public easement on the right of way, and the location of the existing wells and septic systems and setbacks thereof. For the most part, we did require that. It was just the wording kind of was confusing, to say the least, so we just kind of cleaned that wording up. And we did add the setbacks and wells and septic. That was something that our environmental health department really wanted to see on subdivision as well, because one thing they struggle with is knowing that existing septic are well locations and then getting them in back setback because they have regulations and their ordinances that require those to be set back at certain distance. And then number 11 on that one, the district in which the land to be subdivided is located, including but not limited to the drainage district, emergency service district, which include ambulance and fire, school districts, and zoning districts. You used to just require zoning districts, our auditor's office thought it would be a good idea to maybe include some of those ones, especially drainage. You do run into a lot of issues with drainage districts and subdivisions sometimes. But then including the school and the ambulance and fire districts, just mainly for the information of people who would be within a flat area cost of buying a lot of that information very, very easily accessible to people that include on there. So. And then lastly, number 13, dealing with 911 addresses. In the past, we've kind of gone away from this regulation administratively just because it's been kind of a hindrance on our department. What we're going to look for here is the request to include the existing 911 address and then a flat note that also says that upon the zoning permit and more or less final determination of where the driveways are going to be located, at that point we'll issue the 911 address. Kind of some of the problems we were running into on this one was 911 addresses are being assigned with the flat, and then they actually put the driveway in and it doesn't match up with an address on the other side of the road, so we have to make sure we change that address and it's just became a royal pain. We did away with that requirement kind of a while ago, and we just kind of not bringing that up to include that.
Okay. some of you may know, I know that Leanne does.
Mid-Iowa is going to put up a tower on our place, okay? Because it's pretty well halfway between Ames and Nevada. Mm-hmm. All right, so in this thing, is that saying that the tower has to have a different 9/11 address?
Well, that's not covered in this particular regulation right here, but that actually is a requirement.
That they have that tower has a separate 9/11.
Yeah, I think some of that has to do with
the person working at the tower may need to call for emergency services.
This isn't going to be that tall.
There's something with the FCC that requires individual addresses for those things, because we'll get I'm trying to think of what the
FCC license does require that, and a lat long also.
What's the difference with internet calls? I can't. Broadband. I don't know what I'm thinking about, but we're seeing a lot of broadband utility boxes pop up in the county in different areas, and those broadband companies are constantly calling on requesting an address.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming that has something to do with some FCC regulation that that's included on there. Because at first, when I noticed it, it was confusing, but I've been told it's necessary. So
I can see if somebody was there and got electrocuted or got hurt, you know, it would be from your house.
It's going to be awfully gosh.
Well, yeah, exactly, but it might just help a little bit. Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, some of them are.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's actually a different standalone
ordinance
or
the elimination of what was there for 2, number 3, and number 4 is because that's moved elsewhere?
No, with that, our kind of internal thought process was all the required legal documents that go with the subdivision plan, we didn't want to require those because ultimately what people are coming to us for is a resolution of approval from a governing body. There's a list of like 6 or 7 legal documents that you need, and one of them is that resolution of approval from the governing body. The only reason we were ever asking for those other ones, my understanding is to just verify that the legal descriptions that they had in those documents were accurate. But we also now include, as part of this process, an official legal description to be submitted, and we're just going to assume that legal description being used on everything. So, the documents were being submitted to us, the problem was we were getting the originals of those documents.
Now the auditor is going to handle all that?
No, what they'll do is once the subdivision is finally approved, ultimately approved by the board of supervisors, they will send a resolution. The resolution comes down to our department. We inform the applicant we have the resolution ready. So when you have all the other legal documents ready on top of that, you can come and report them all.
Much better process, yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's a little bit easier on the applicant too, because yes. It seems like with this process, a lot of times you were. The majority of the questions we were answering is what is an attorney's opinion, what's the treasurer's certificate,
and the clerk of court certification is only good for a certain number of days, and so if your process gets delayed, then they have to do it again. And things must have changed.
So mainly those are the things that
Well, I just asked Rand that what you're talking about was the wind farm around Bacon Lake. And now I'm thinking about those two wind generators, mills, I call them, that are west of Nevada. Is that part of Nevada? They aren't zoned into Nevada. So did they have to go, did that apply to them also?
No, they didn't have to.
Okay.
No, I thought she was. I'm going to get it. I'm going to come back at 30 here.
Yeah.
And I think
pretty big one up there by McCall's for engineering.
The one up by Dayton Lake.
If you go then to section 87.09, the major subdivision plat. Are you all there?
Okay.
Subsection number three there are some requirements for preliminary plat. Says the preliminary plat shall be drawn at appropriate scale to reflect the readability of the subdivision element. In the past, we'd always required that be at a certain scale. We're trying to get away from that and just put a little bit more onus on the actual surveyor to give up the subdivision plat that's readable. Sometimes you know, your subdivision plats that don't need to be at a certain scale like that because it's just in the way of the paper. So. And then lastly, if you go to section 87.1, this is where we've added a new section called vacation of official plats. Quite honestly, this is something that has been a state code with any subdivision regulation that you've ever had. We've never had it in our code, so we're adding that. There are some cases where, I'm not sure if we've run into any here yet, but I know there's a few that may be coming soon, where people are looking at vacating old lots, kind of combining into one parcel. So this is our way of adding this in here, and then we'll come up with an initial process to help them. And as far as chapter 87, that's all I think we have. Any questions on any of this? Yeah, I don't know if I answered anything. Then moving on to chapter 88, first section 88.02, talking about the street classification. This is kind of where we did make quite a few changes. First of all, if you go to, it would be subsection C on the private street. In the past, I think we've always allowed private streets. If you look at that language in there, for the most part, that's unchanged. But I will read it, the private streets are permitted provided they serve four or fewer lots only in subdivisions of not more than four lots. Private streets shall be designed in accordance with the requirements listed on table 88.1. This is a big thing that we put in here, however, pavement requires shall not apply in private streets. That was a recommendation from our county engineer that we want to sell off private streets. These will almost transfer into the easements that you see in a fence. However, we're going to have ditches and everything. We have put one here, but we don't want to have such a stringent regulation on them that they have to pay for that, especially if it's going to be private and not dedicated to the public. As far as table 88.1 goes, actually, the one that you have in there, I don't know if you didn't give them an amended copy of that video. I noticed this today when I was going through it that the table had changed and all the changes that we made, there were some changes that we didn't make that table, so you have a copy of that, obviously.
Okay, we changed the standards.
Mainly what we did here is we took some of the stuff that we had built in various areas of the ordinance and just kind of put it all on the table format. Anything that applies to road standards we put in here. We did the pavement thickness at the request from the county engineer was increased in a few areas as you'll see there. But the main thing was with horizontal and vertical curvature. This kind of goes a little bit above my knowledge based on a lot of the stuff we've always relied heavily on there for this. But some of the stuff in there I'll go back to the old subdivision that was reviewed not too long ago. There were some problems with being able to meet the requirements that we had in here with that particular subdivision. They used alternative compliance to help meet some of those because they were actually using the road standards in our conservation overlay district. So with that, Darren Moon, our county engineer, did recommend that we just reference the Iowa Statewide Urban Design Specification Program, CDA, geometric design tables for those, and that kind of helps out and actually really does give us more updated regulations. I think what we were using was probably scripted in the 1970s, so again, really do a good update on them. Matt, I don't think there was too much on that table, but the subdivision was thinking of combining a lot of stuff in that table. Any questions on any of that? Okay, we're in section 88.03 then. Few changes on here. Flag lock, we did add a provision for flag lock. The flag lock should be avoided wherever possible. It's not really strong language, but we've never really mentioned anything in the past, and again, there was some concern from the committee that we were reviewing this with that flag lock sometimes can be problematic. We weren't comfortable from our staff standpoint of prohibiting them because there are some instances where they probably aren't necessary, but by putting that language in there, we feel that at least that puts some onus on the initial applicant to prove why they need those flag lots.
I don't know what a flag lot is.
And I wish I kind of had explained it, I don't know if we have a regulation. Well, you might have your book of regulations, but it's kind of almost looks like a flagpole. For example, you have a long strip of land going out to the road sometimes for a driveway, you have a long strip of land
on
the road, and all of a sudden the big way larger chunk of land.
It's actually like a flagpole.
Yeah.
Flagpole.
Okay.
Yeah, Leanne has a table there, I think she can move.
Okay. Case that came up that dealt with that. That was a
future possibility of a street going out to a middle street, the street from the property.
Yeah, that was, you're talking about a wooden subdivision. You're not really a flag lot in that situation.
Okay.
That would be a flag lot, yeah, because it's got a narrow spot to get back to the main area where the home structure would be. They still can do one, but we prefer them not to.
Yeah, we prefer them not to. More or less, like I said, this kind of puts the onus on the applicant to really realize why they need that flag lot. Like I said, there's definitely going to be times where it's necessary and you get one prohibited.
Okay.
Number nine, that's kind of more just almost a fix, but we used the big building lines, we're changing that setback line. That's really what it's meant the entire time. It's just we use the word setback more often than we use the word building as far as setback line. So we didn't make that change. Any questions on any of that? Moving on to section 88.04, this is access requirements. This is an entirely new section that we're adding. This really kind of takes the county engineer's regulations as far as separation of driveways, puts them into our regulations. I think it's very necessary to have this on here. It really helps us in the subdivision planning process to kind of give the applicants an understanding of exactly what the county engineer's driveway separation requirements are. So that's added on to there. As far as street funds requirements, this is kind of where we get into avoiding easements being used like we've seen, for example, just north of here, Pop Subdivision, you know, they, I believe, had two separate easements for that subdivision that were providing access to multiple lots. Again, completely bypassing the street specification standards as far as ditching and all that stuff goes with roads. So kind of what we did here, for the most part, we left the language that we had on there as far as easement allowed, and we really kind of put that to reflect existing lots right now. However, what we do say then is any proposed subdivision where you're creating new lots, you can't take access through an easement. What we say now, this is any lot parcel tract that exists at the effective date or adoption of, the effective date of adoption or amendment of this ordinance that does not abut on a public or private road shall have an exclusive, unobstructed private easement as recorded in the office of the county recorder. And so in these cases where access is provided by easement to a more single family dwelling, it gets into the actual listing requirement on that. And then lastly, it says in no case shall an easement provide access to more than four single family dwellings or for two or more two family or multiple dwellings. So again, what that does is it does kind of grandfather in the existing lots that would be landlocked and you need an easement, but it gives up the power to say no to subdivisions that come in and request to provide access to an easement. And just some background on this, like I said, it's been kind of a thorn inside of our common engineering. Size, because we have these three classification standards in there for a reason. Drainage and stuff like that are very important. And when you're using it by using it, really just kind of hamper the efforts to make sure that stuff's all done. So, it's in our way of kind of closing that loophole that we called it out from here.
I could just add to there's been some ongoing concern that with these easements, how adequate is fire protection? If a fire engine did need to get out there, can they turn around? Do they have to back out? This does put.
Okay, moving on to section 88.05, the Environmental and Natural Resource Standards. And we can turn to subsection 1A, that is on the next page. That deals with the easements along the stream, but one of the same subdivision question, which is very kind of an easement, dedicated for the maintenance of the streams on both sides of it. There were some concerns with our conservation department that, yeah, it's great to have those easements on there, but since the language itself reads that for Story County's ability to go in there and maintain the stream if necessary, there were some concerns from our conservation department that the maintenance might fall back on the county in those situations. So we did put on there that suitable revision for maintenance of streams from those easements shall be provided through the homeowners association, deed covenant, or through other similar provisions as approved by the board.
The company that's doing consultation for you, have provided what we have here in this format, or this what you're sending to them, and then they may.
No, they've taken the red lines and strikeouts that you're looking at and put it into one document. It's actually part of the entire packet you have, but given the nature of these changes, my ability to just highlight and tell you where it is in the regulations is going to be really difficult. So we took what we sent to the code company and just gave that to you.
Environmental, and then it's here A.
Yeah, they included it.
Okay.
bit one, then A.
Talking about structural.
Me
too.
I'm old.
Well, I am too. So.
Cool. Learn something over here. And going on to number four on the next page on that one. This is the picture that I sent you. It does kind of apply. And this deals with erosion control. As you might know, when you're doing a construction project and you're disturbing more than 1 acre of land, well, for the most part, when we issue zoning permits, we're always dealing with more than 1 acre of land, so this has never been particularly a problem. But you're required to get a permit through the National Pollution Discharge and Elimination System, the NPDES permit, as the time I referred to, for erosion control. Problem we run into, you know, a couple occasions now in the picture that you see here, are one of them are we do have a requirement from zoning districts for lot sizes of less than 1 acre. So for those particular houses, we're seeing that no erosion control measures are being provided because the state doesn't require it. Story County has nothing in our regulations that really require it either. So pictures that I provided you there are one particular example of a farmland where new houses being constructed without any erosion control measures. These are taken by Margaret Gans, our environmental health director. You'll obviously see some of the concerns she has on there.
Yeah,
why they are very concerning because there's some pretty bad erosion.
Move the dirt.
So really what we did there is we developed a regulation that more or less says that if you're not required to get that NPDES permit, this is what you'll have to do. We allow them pretty much, what I did is I took some of the Iowa Construction Site Erosion Control Manual here, just took some suggestions that they had in there turning the regulations for silt fences, compost filter tubes and wattles, as they're commonly referred to. You see these a lot of times in line municipalities when they're building houses on lots. You'll see a lot of these, particularly erosion control measures being used. I think we're pretty confident that any contractors may know exactly what they're looking at here because, again, they're very commonly used.
Yeah, I see those silt fences a lot.
Yeah.
All they have to do is report that they're going to do that. Does anybody check on this?
And that's, see, what we're going to have to probably do, and this is something probably a little bit more administratively, is through the zoning permit process, figure out a way to make sure that they are doing that. I don't necessarily, you know, in a lot of the instances, what we've done in the past is just, hey, these are the regulations, we'll go out there and make sure that everything's being done upon inspection. But as far as the erosion control goes, especially in some of these situations, I think we're probably going to need to do something, but I think that, and the end, you might want to comment on it, but I think that's something we'll do administratively.
Once we get to the point that this is adopted and we begin to implement it, we may have to look at not one, but perhaps two inspections. I don't know. We're going to have some flexibility to figure out what level of staff involvement is going to be needed on site, when the timing is appropriate, and hopefully not require more inspections because that does take our staff time. But some sites may just require that, and we just need to be open-minded when we go into it. I think the benefits definitely outweigh the cost, though, in having this in place.
Mainly the only thing we did there, the minimum number of accessible parking spaces, number three, we referenced the actual code, the federal code that references federal standards, and we took them out in table form and then stated after our side what the required number are. You know, our fear, I guess, is that federal regulations will change, but our particular regulations will remain the same, so we just wanted to be able to reference federal regulations, so if those do change, then obviously.
2.12, a couple pages down, regarding frontage road requirements. In the past, we've only required those in commercial and industrial zoning districts. We're now going to also include those with the agribusiness district that might turn on some of those districts. And I think we're seeing kind of a shift from the initial thought of the agribusiness district is becoming maybe a little bit bigger than we particularly thought it would, but it doesn't hurt to add that frontage road requirement there in case of where it might be necessary. And lastly, on alternative compliance, we need to have, in that section 88.16, we need to have a requirement or a possibility that if they maintain accessible parking ratios, we would use that as a form of alternative compliance. So we just take that out because we felt that the regulation or the requirement that you have to shouldn't be used as alternative compliance. So we just remove that particular requirement. But in a nutshell, those are the subdivision changes that we're proposing. Like I said, I think the biggest thing is on the street specification standards and trying to disallow the easement from further happening. So, if there's any other questions on any of those stuff, I'll turn it back over to Jim.
Back to 88.08.13. Which is right before the parking stall standard table. So you've added in all cases the minimum required accessible parking spaces shall be provided. You regulate maximums. You have a minimum number of accessible spaces, and the minimum number of accessible spaces is a function of how many spaces there are, but you do not ever state the minimum number of spaces in your ordinance.
The table, you're talking for the accessible.
No, just the minimum number of spaces for a business.
Yeah, I don't think, per se, we have them.
What we would do to determine the minimum number of accessible spaces, we would look at the table if it's a convenience store and one per 6,000 square feet, whatever it is, they'd have to provide 10, they would be allowed up to 10 spaces. We would take then that to capture the minimum number of accessible spaces. So at the minimum, they need to provide that. If they want to go above and beyond it, they can up to that cap.
Every business determines the minimum number of gross spaces that they have based upon their own business plan. So if it's a convenience store, they say, well, we're never going to have more than four customers, and so we're only going to have four parking spaces.
No, but go to the table. No, but what we would do is, if I could get the right one here, first of all, we would go to table 88.5, which is parking ratios by type.
Okay.
We would identify the type of use. Yeah. And establish then the maximum number of parking spots permitted for that property. From that, we would go back to the well, it used to be a table.
So that's the maximum number.
That's the maximum for the entire site.
So, as a convenience store owner, say, for the convenience store,
one space for over 250 square feet of gross floor.
Well, convenience stores is third one down. Store shop versus a convenience store is over 2,000
square
feet. Yeah, there you go.
So that's the idea, it's the maximum number of space.
Right.
And so, say the maximum number of spaces that I can have is 10 spaces, but I elect to only build three. because you're not telling me how small I can make my parking. I choose three.
But of those three, you need to meet the minimum accessible parking spaces.
And one.
If that's one or, yeah, in section one, if that's five. Right. If that's what the formula allows, yeah. If they want five and the formula requires all five to be accessible, they all five have to be accessible. So the key is they, no matter what, they need to meet the minimum accessible spaces. But in no time can they exceed the maximum, and I don't think they would.
And I think the question you were getting at is, we don't seem to have a minimum number of spaces. A lot of locations. We're not a city, so we don't really have to worry about people parking on roads and stuff like that. I guess we kind of do. I mean, if you have a bigger problem, we can take care of that.
Okay. So we first go to 88-54, parking ratio site type. Okay, and that's the maximum number, right? So then we go to which table?
The table, it's just section one under the very... What section is it?
Because the table accessible parking spaces has been totally eliminated.
Yeah.
Part of the federal rate.
So right.
Go to the 2010 America's Disability Act standards for accessible design. That table is in there.
Right.
The exact table that we're taking out is in there. And again, the reason we wanted to do that was because if the Fed ever changed that requirement,
okay,
you would have to actually go through and also change our.
Oh, rules. Gotcha.
This just makes it easier. So they change, okay, it, and we don't have to also change it. And of course, we don't necessarily get, they don't call us up and say, we changed it.
So does that require us to have an understanding of what the 2010 ADA standards for accessible parking design?
Yeah, and what we would do is anytime we get a request for anything that requires parking, you
give it to us.
Yeah, that's in the staff report that we've written.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay.
Anything else on those two chapters?
Okay. Transition back to the other packet and go to page 745. 89.02, subsection 2, subsection A. At the very end, it says at any one location. That is an addition to clarify. We had a lot of questions. It says between the two sign faces, do not exceed 3 feet. It just makes, we need to say where, at any one location. Does that mean it could be, I think you guys know why we would do that. And then below, under item 3, limitations, A subsection 1, B subsection 1, C subsection 1, and D subsection 1, total cumulative sign area of all external signs on a lot, parcel, or tract. That on a lot, parcel, or tract is new. We needed to clarify we're talking one parcel, not three or... A lot of this seems minor, but we've had issues come up that we just need to clarify, things like that. And then go to page 747, item C, subsection 1. Previously, it just said Iowa DOT approval if applicable. We want to clarify that that has to happen before we will approve a zoning permit. Again, implementation. Okay, go to... page 756. Item 2. This is when the Board of Adjustment is taking action on a conditional use permit. Item number 2, add It says, if the Board of Adjustment concludes that all development criteria will be met by the development, it shall approve the application plans unless it concludes, based on information submitted, and here's the new part, with the official application materials and at the hearing. This is just to clarify, when the Board of Adjustment takes action, it includes all the application materials, not if someone brings a revised application to the hearing that night. It's everything. It's one full package, one whole package. We've had a couple of times where that's, we weren't sure which was the official plan, which wasn't. And so just clarifies, includes the application materials, the original application materials. Some of these are just really to ease our life. Page 759, item 3. This is when we talk about conditional use permits may be extended, adding the language after the first sentence. Permit holder shall submit a written extension request and applicable fee to Planning and Development Department. Extension request shall be considered by the Board of Adjustment in accordance with adopted development review procedures. We had a case, a conditional use permit for sand and gravel extraction that went on and on and on and kept on going back to the Board of Adjustment. It took staff time to do that. It took our time to notify, do legal notices. So it's appropriate that that applicant, they're going to delay the start of the construction, that they bear the responsibility to cover those costs to have it extended. Page 763. On the very top, we're talking about at this point that communications, towers, and facilities, cell towers, just tying in separation in this chapter from planned and a residential use, existing residential planned uses. And towards the bottom third, you'll see it starts residential purposes if it has the county development plan designation of rural residential area. This is the new part now. Or a residential designation is defined unapproved for fringe area plan. Try and tie back that to the fringe area plans as we adopt them. This is part of the standards for approval that the Board of Adjustment looks at when they're approving cell towers. You too, and when you're reviewing for recommendation. Following page, flip the page over to 7464. This is a big deletion. We're talking about removal of abandoned towers and facilities. Prior to the sentence starting, if the use of the communication tower facility is abandoned, it used to say this. The owner of the tower facility with written authorization from the property owner shall file annually a declaration with the Story County Planning and Development Department as to the continuing operation of every tower facility installed subject to these regulations. Failure to do so may be construed to mean that the facility is no longer in use and may be considered abandoned subject to the provisions for removal. We've received one in the past 15 years.
We're going to keep using the tower.
Yeah. And so we just say, take that out, please. And then that next section, page 765 on the very top under item number 1, we used to have an item number 2. We're still talking about abandoned towers. It just said documentation must be provided to Story County Planning and Development Department with signatures by all property owners with an interest in the tower facility, stating knowledge of the penalties associated with the county infraction, including that all costs for removal of abandoned towers facilities in accordance with these regulations may be assessed against property under their ownership, blah, blah, blah. We want that taken out. Gotta love those deletions. And I think that gets us to getting really close to end here. Page 776. Very last addition to the table, yard waste composting facility, adding that as a conditional use permit or conditional use in the A1, A2, I1, and I2 districts. And going to page 800.
Uh,
under review meetings, item number 6, towards the middle of the page. This is a section where we're talking about zoning permits, page 800. We're just adding language at the very end. We, interagency, can review or can waive the requirement for conceptual review if we deem fit. Sometimes rezonings don't need that meeting, but it needs to be codified that we can do that. Page 801, under required permits, adding, it starts out, land shall not be occupied or used, and no building, add, or structure, just clarifying building or structure, shall hereafter be, add the word moved. We've had people moving buildings from one property to another. This clarifies that they need a zoning permit to do that. Flip the page to 802 under item number 5. Someone wants to amend or modify a site plan. The very last sentence, if they change property ownership, they need a new application. And then that's it. Oh, the under enforcement, number 1, chapter 93 of this code of ordinances is what we used to have as the administrative rules for citing code infractions, and now it's part of the ordinance. But you, that's not something that you will ever review and recommend on, just like the floodplain management ordinance and the street standard, or the 8911 address thing, that goes right to the Board of Supervisors. But that's, if you ever wonder where that section has gone to, now you know it's there, but something else. Any questions thus far?
Would you explain that to me again?
Conceptual review meeting. Rezoning before they can officially submit has to come in and meet with staff at a conceptual review meeting. That's before, ideally, they've acquired property, spent survey costs, etc. What this does, it says the interagency review team, if someone asks us to waive that meeting, we can. If it's rezoning from commercial to industrial, just because it doesn't really need us all to meet to discuss it, we can waive that requirement.
I think I understand what you're saying, but I can't get that out of the words that are listed there. Because if you're
the applicant. Yeah, that just happens to be how we word it. And that's how it currently is. Looking back the previous slide to see if it says anything about it.
Director or his or her designee.
In the past, we've called it petitions to rezone, requests. I mean, different sections of it. Yeah.
Okay.
But the interagency review team is the one that makes the request to bypass it.
No.
Is that what I'm seeing?
It's the applicant that requests not to have it waived. The interagency review team is the one that decides.
I know what you're saying. It's just the wording. Yeah,
all applicants requesting a rezoning application.
That's what I was looking at. All applicants requesting rezoning must attend a conceptual review meeting prior to and to be considered unless the requirement is waived.
Unless the applicant requests waiving.
The applicant must attend the meeting unless they request that be waived.
Yeah.
Which is much clearer.
Yeah, you may have 10 people owning the property and they're all requesting. You wouldn't want all 10 people.
Correct.
Yeah.
A designee.
I think we understand. I mean, through your motion, I'll come back to that one, too.
Let me write that section.
Yeah, it is.
I hear that right now.
Okay, and then, so this is the way it is. I kept track. And I do want to note that we did send this to the county attorney's office for review, too.
Okay.
All the codification projects went through them, and we in addition, gave our assistant county attorney time on those 87 and 88, really the kind of meat of the changes, and she didn't identify any concerns with it, well, so we wouldn't be here tonight. You know, your alternatives before you are to approve the proposed changes, approve with modifications. This is going on to the board supervisors, or recommend approval. Recommend approval with modifications, or recommend denial. If you were to recommend what's before you with modifications, I have a list of those modifications. I'll read them into the record. Page 506 of the draft code of ordinances. It lists ordinance number 29. You would simply direct staff to send the correct ordinance number. Page 622 of the draft code of ordinances, item number 9 should actually be item number 8. Under the submittal requirements in sections 87.063A subsection 4, 87.07.3A subsection 4, 87.08.3A4, Christine, you going fast enough? 87.09.3A4, that we would modify the language regarding proposed and remaining easements. This was under submittal requirements. Table 88.1 would be modified to add the reference to the SUDIS standards, replacing the table language as presented by staff at the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting. And then section 92.06.6 regarding the review meeting would be redrafted as discussed at the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting. With that, I think that's all the changes we have. Did you have something else? Yeah.
That's all I got.
The chair calls for it.
I'm sorry, you're supposed to ask that.
Are there any questions for staff at all prior to that? If none, I would entertain a motion.
I move approval with modifications.
Do I have a second?
I'll second that.
Any further discussion on that? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Do you roll call?
Roll call? Yeah.
Miller?
Aye.
Couser?
Aye.
Gast?
Aye.
Sutter?
Aye.
Motion approved.
Appropriate real quick for the minutes too, just to reflect that there's nobody from the public here, and that's the reason we didn't open the public forum. I know we don't need to, just for reasons of recording.
Yeah. Better. Yeah.
Yep. I got your back.
When these are all approved by the Board of Supervisors, does that mean we get in a book or what?
That's a question I don't know the answer to yet. Yes, you will be getting a new copy of the regulations. Whether or not you get an entire code of ordinances as this is laid out, or you just get the relevant chapters, is yet to be determined.
Me too. Just what we have to deal with.
Do you have any long-range planning updates?
I'll wait till next time.
Any
items recommended to the Board of Supervisors or the Board of Adjustment, follow-ups, anything like that?
That last meeting, I don't know. Bella Woods, I know, and the prelim on that's been approved. Bella Woods, the prelims were approved on that, and there's work on the final plat right now, which obviously the commission won't see, but the board did approve the...
Bella Woods was...
The one out by Cameron School Road, and where Cameron School Road and where the AMZ Free Church is, Fairbody and Golf and Country Club. Yeah. The one that had all the trees on the property.
Right.
Is there anything else?
Had any further comments or?
At the last meeting, I asked about setting up a time to redo the, to have an educational meeting on the Ace River Prevention Plan. And when that gets set, it would be nice to have the updated copies of this and any other documents that we need in order to do our business kind of put together, because we have the Story County Development Plan, and there may be other things that we should have, that we take with us to meetings in case questions come up. So you might just put that on the board.
We can do that. The education session on the Ames River French Plan will probably not be scheduled for quite a bit. The city, or the Story County Supervisor, sent a letter to the cities of Ames and Gilbert asking that the plan itself be reviewed, a list of items referred on to the cities, and staffs will meet. Once that's referred from each city to their respective staff, the staffs will then meet to start talking about those items. So I think it might be a little bit premature to do a briefing on it if it's going to change. And it very well might.
So, in the interim, there is a development in that area, and we just play it by ear.
Well, we still have the adopted 28E agreement and the adopted plan. That's still in effect. That's a good point. Let's not schedule it. If we have something come in, we'll know. And then we can do maybe a quick and down and dirty before that agenda item to go over it. Yeah.
If we have a June meeting.
Could I also tell you that I left you a claim form if you would like to submit for mileage reimbursement to the commission meeting from your home to the commission meeting round trip? Please fill that out, name and address where you'd like the payment sent at the top, highlighted, the date of the meetings you attended, and the number of miles. If you could have that submitted to me by the end of the week. Make sure you sign and date the bottom. Yep, there's not very many people that do, but you do have that option, so I wanted to provide it for you tonight. We don't have anything for the June meeting as of yet, but something could show up in the mail tomorrow. But if there's nothing on the agenda after mail tomorrow, I'll send out a notice via email. Okay. I want it canceled, I can let you know right away, any earlier than I do with the agenda.
There is a Planning and Zoning Commission member being appointed tomorrow by the Board of Supervisors, Susan Donaldson.
What's that? She's going
to be appointed to the Board of Planning and Zoning Commission. It's been, this is to fill the vacant position,
okay.
Not the one
immediately.
Yeah, exactly.
Incorporated or unincorporated?
Unincorporated. I think she's between here and McCallsburg.
Up there, too.
Motion to
adjourn.
I probably won't be here either. Because Jim, well, Jim's having some surgery. Subletter.
We currently, with our new member being appointed tomorrow, have six and a forum for action to.
Going to be the majority
of current membership, four. They're in good shape. Yep.
Go ahead. I'll do that.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.